grab some popcorn and a favorite chair. The love of movies is why we're here. Press play and don't delay. Let Phil be our guide to a cinematic day. Phil at the movies, from the silver screen to his podcast stream. Phil's covering every movie dream. Phil at the movies. Phil at the movies.
Well, everybody, we made it. 6 months in, 6 months to go. 2025 is half over. And what more appropriate time to take a look at the year so far, a year in movies, while the world is, it's spinning, to say the least. The world of movies is a much better place. And that is what I want to talk with you about today, a year in review, my top 10 favorite films of the year so far. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Phil at the Movies. I, of course, am your host, Phil, and you are listening to show number 171 of this ongoing podcast that is, you guessed it, For the Love of Movies. And just that today, going to talk about the year so far, because I have been loving the movies this year. I mean, I say that every year. I mean, this is a movie podcast, for God's sake. So it would be kind of silly and oxymoronic if I wasn't a fan of movies. But any event, this year, I have to say, I've been loving the wide array of genres and really unexpected films that I thought might be good, but then just completely blew my mind in the best possible way. And so now I want to give you my top 10 films of the year. It'll be fun to revisit this in 6 more months because, of course, I will do a year in review later in December. And, of course, be interesting to see which of these top 10 make the final top 10. I know there are a few right off the bat that are going to be in that final countdown come December, but it is sort of amusing to check in now and to sort of see where things are. I was looking through my list at this point last year and then comparing it with where things ended up in December, and there was some carryover, but a lot did change. So again, that's part of the fun, part of the excitement. You never know what is going to happen. I mean, not to reopen old wounds, but certainly at this point last year, I did not have Joker Folie à Deux being as one of my biggest disappointments of the year. That was certainly, if someone had said that to me, I would have said, oh no, impossible. That film is going to be probably number one. Well, the joke was on me. But then again, on the flip side, a movie like Long Legs was not on my radar, even though I knew it was coming out at this point last year. I did not expect that film to resonate and have the impact that it ultimately did. So it's kind of fun. And I know there's a lot more on the horizon over the next few weeks and months. So it's going to be really interesting to circle back at the end of the year. But I want to, of course, just preface it because I know people get awful passionate about movie picks and top 10 rankings. These are my choices. I am not trying to make an objective list. I think at this point, objectivity when it comes to art is irrelevant. Everything is subjective, particularly when we are talking about movies. But again, fair warning, these are my top 10 films of the year so far. You may have something similar, you may have something different, and that is okay. All right, before I begin with the main event, of course, let me do as I often do at this time, to say thank you to you, the listeners, you, the friends of this podcast, for tuning in each and every week and not having your fill of me. So I do appreciate your support and, of course, your friendship over these many years now. Again, this would not be possible. 171 episodes and still going strong. That is all thanks to you and this cinematic community that we have created here together. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, thank you, thank you. And if you could be so kind to rate and review this podcast, share it with like-minded friends and family, anybody who you think might enjoy listening to a fellow movie buff, or as I was recently called in the comment section on a post on Twitter, an insufferable film bro. So I wear that as a badge of honor. So if someone's looking to fill the void, if you will, for a film bro in their life, yeah, please send them this podcast. That will check that box. But no, in all seriousness, if you could share it, and of course like and rate and review this podcast, it does a great deal with helping to grow and continue to expand this audience. And as I said, we will keep on going strong. 171 episodes and still many, 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 many more movies to talk about. But quickly, two movie-related points to mention in passing. Since I last dropped an episode, we now know who is going to be directing the next James Bond film. And this one, I have to say, it caught me by surprise. His name was mentioned as a possible candidate, but I did not actually expect him to get the job. But we now know that the 26th film in the wildly successful James Bond franchise is going to be directed by none other than Denis Villeneuve. This is, of course, the director of Dune Part 2, Arrival, Prisoners, etc. Such a fantastic choice, and I can't wait to see what he brings to the franchise now. He is a lifelong fan of the character, and just knowing his work and seeing what he has done across genres, I think we're going to be in for a really unique entry for the Bond franchise, and kind of a kickstart, if you will, in this new age. No word yet on who will play James Bond, though Amazon, the studio who will be heading up the next film, reportedly has three actors in mind: Jacob Elordi, Harris Dickinson, and Tom Holland. Interesting choices, I will say that. I think of those three, I would probably go with Jacob Elordi over the other two. But, my own personal pick for James Bond, I doubt it's ever going to happen, but we can put it out there into the world and manifest, would be Robert Pattinson. So I know, Twilight to Batman to James Bond, quite a roller coaster there. But no, I honestly think, and this is going off of his role in Christopher Nolan's film Tenet, I think he would be a fantastic choice for Bond. So I am saying a prayer. I'm putting that out there into the world that I would like to see Robert Pattinson take the take on the role of 007. But who knows? I'm sure we'll find out soon enough. But again, the fact that Denis Villeneuve is going to be directing it, that is a major win as far as I am concerned. So look forward to more developments on the Bond franchise in the coming months. And then the last little news that just gets really silly, but I, of course, couldn't resist it. The New York Times has been doing a top 100 movies of the century, and they really came up with, I thought, a very respectable and strong list that covered a lot of different films across all genres that really defined this first half of the 21st century. And actually, the number one film they picked of the century is Parasite, which I thought was a marvelous choice. But of course, Twitter is going to Twitter, and they, of course, have now turned against that film because that's just seems to be the mentality of social media. Whatever is held in high regard or in great esteem must then be knocked down a peg. And that, of course, has been happening all over social media based on the pick from the New York Times for the number one superhero film of the 21st century. And it really should come as no surprise, but The Dark Knight was the pick by the New York Times, and I think a perfect choice, and I think most people would agree that that film has had a lasting impact on the comic book genre, as well as just being a fantastic film. Again, I have made no secret about my love for The Dark Knight, but of course, social media is going to do its thing, and people are raging about how, they got it wrong, and this is not somehow the greatest comic book film of the 21st century. And look, everybody has their opinion. I think if you don't like The Dark Knight, I have no interest in hearing your opinion. I'm sorry. I'm just, that's just how I feel about it. But at the end of the day, you can like the film or you can have another preference, but when people try to deride the movie and dismiss its influence, my response is simply to either take up journaling or have a stimulating conversation with a wall, because if you're trying to ignore or degrade that film, you'll pardon the expression, but I think you have some bats in your belfry. All right. Any event, just some interesting news, movie news to share with you. But you were here, of course, for the main event, my top 10 films of the year so far. Here we go. All right, so on to the main event. Now, normally when I make these top 10 lists, it can be a daunting task. And thinking back in years past, there was a lot of, rethinking and shuffling of the deck. This was probably the easiest top 10 list I've had to make. These films just came right. I didn't have to think much beyond just sort of my initial gut reaction, my feeling towards these movies. And again, I'm really going to be curious to see where everything shakes up at the end of the year. I do know there's a few that are going to ultimately carry on, but I'll be curious to see where the rest of the films fall when we check back in December. And of course, let me know your list as well. What are your top 10 films of the year so far? Again, this is always great to sort of check in and see where everybody else has for their picks at this point. Again, halfway through 2025. Just mind-blowing, honestly. But, all right, enough stalling, enough delay. Let me begin. So number 10 for me is Hard Eyes. And this, of course, is the slasher. Some would call it a more of a comedy. I think it's a great blending of the genre. And I'm a huge defender of this film. Number one, I'm typically not the biggest fan when it comes to mixing both horror and comedy. It really takes a death script in a lot of ways, as well as a compelling story and of course, the actors as well. I think of a film like Drop, which I was not a big fan of, sort of the tone blending in that film, or even Hell of a Summer. But Hard Eyes, I don't know, just everything from the aesthetic of the Hard Eyes killer to the great camaraderie and chemistry of Olivia Holt and Mason Gooding. Just a fun, wild time. And again, for someone that is not the biggest fan of blending the two genres of comedy and horror, this felt like a perfect match. And again, the fact that it's a slasher movie, I'm all in. I've seen this film twice. I enjoyed it even more the second time. It's going to be a constant watch during spooky season. And because this is centered around Valentine's Day, it feels like it's going to become a annual Valentine's season watch as well. So number 10 is Hard Eyes. Moving right along, number 9, Thunderbolts. And this is the MCU. This is the Marvel film I have been waiting to see. An absolute banger of a movie. Thunderbolt sends a much-needed shockwave into the MCU. It is a superhero film. It is a comic book film. But it's so much more than that. This is really a character piece. And not to put down the other films. Again, I have enjoyed many of them. But this one tackles such topics as depression, isolation, loneliness, sort of the weight of being a hero. All of these sort of elements that other films have maybe touched on, but never in a way that is so grounded and authentic. To me, I found this film to be riveting, to be engaging, and to really be such a great character piece. And everyone in the film is fantastic, but it's all held together by Florence Pugh. She really excels in this movie and jumps right to the pack as far as actors in the MCU, as far as I'm concerned. It's a shame this movie did not resonate as much with the general audience. I know they changed the name to the New Avengers, which, again, marketing and questionable choices there, maybe some overall comic book or MCU fatigue, but this is another one. Don't sleep on this movie. And again, particularly for people who may not be fans of the genre. I know people might think, oh my God, I'm walking, you know, into a series that's been going on since 2008. And yes, you know, with all, any of these films, there always feels like there's a little bit of homework in the rear view. But this one just sort of on its own, such a riveting and engaging character study, as well as being a traditional popcorn comic book spectacle. So number 9 for me is Thunderbolts, a film that I will gladly go to bat for any day of the week. I think it is the best Marvel movie. Yes, from Iron Man to the present, I think Thunderbolts clears them all. And I would be more than happy if the MCU continued this type of storytelling into the future. We'll see. Who knows? Fingers crossed on that. But number 9, Thunderbolts. All right, number 8 is Materialist. And again, this is another film. Went into this movie thinking I would enjoy it. Had a great cast. Dakota Johnson, Chris Evans, Pedro Pascal. But this is, first off, this is not a rom-com. And I think people made the assumption that, oh, this is just a silly, lighthearted romantic comedy. And there are elements of it, but again, much more intelligent, much more character-driven. And I like that in a lot of ways, the movie sort of puts a spotlight on the audience as well as the characters and sort of makes you go through the questions of the choices they're making and then asking yourself, how would you respond in their situation? Really a surprising film. Again, it does have moments and elements that we might associate with the genre. There are points where it feels like it could have been made 20 years ago. But as I said in my review back a few weeks ago, in a lot of ways, this film kind of feels like the inverse of The Notebook, if you will, like as opposed to just sort of being a sappy romantic comedy. This is a much more grounded story, kind of really a realistic take on romance, on dating, on love in the 21st century. And I just found it to be absolutely fantastic. And again, the three performances from Chris Evans, Dakota Johnson, to Pedro Pascal, a perfect trio as far as I'm concerned. And again, another film that I know I'll be revisiting before the end of the year is out. So number 8 is Materialist. All right, number 7. This was one of my most anticipated films of the year. And it is starring Robert Pattinson. It's Mickey 17. And this was probably the only film that I was actually surprised that where I put it on this ranking. And you know, you might be thinking, oh my gosh, you know, you were so excited for this film and it's number 7. No, it has nothing to do with the quality of this film. I think it is another masterpiece by Bong Joon-ho. And of course, Robert Pattinson, he can do no wrong. He's a chameleon of an actor. And what he does in this film, playing double roles, is just nothing short of brilliant. But upon rewatching it recently, I remember saying to myself, I really like this film, but I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I love it as much as I did back when I first saw it in March. Kind of, you know, the novelty wore off a little bit. And there was a little bit more of a, you know, sort of, you know, critiques that I had upon a rewatch. It's still a fantastic film. And visually, it's one of the most imaginative movies of the year. But the second time of going around, I was sort of, I'm not quite sure if this one hits as well as it did the first time. Again, still a great film, still a film that I know I'll be revisiting again in the future and would certainly recommend it. But I was just sort of, you know, amused at kind of where it was originally for me in terms of anticipation this year and where it stands now. So again, number 7. Not an indictment on the quality of the film, certainly not an indictment on the performance by Robert Pattinson. But again, just sort of, as with anything, kind of, you know, time and stepping away and then revisiting it, you sort of either grow to appreciate something more or you sort of look at it with a renewed focus. And so that's where I came away with Mickey 17 at number 7. Number 6 for me, returning to a familiar territory, horror once again. This one, The Monkey. This is directed by Osgood Perkins, and he, of course, directed one of my favorite films of last year, Long Legs, one of my favorite horror films of the last probably 10 years. I think Long Legs is an absolute masterpiece of a movie. The Monkey is a totally different beast, and I think people going into it might have expected it to be a Long Legs 2.0. It's not. This is based on a Stephen King book, and it's, in a lot of ways, there's almost an underlying comedic element to this film. But Theo James, just, again, another situation where somebody's playing a double role as a twin, he just steals the show and runs away with it. And the outrageous and outlandish ways that people die in this film, I mean, it's shocking, it's in your face, it is comical at the same time. It's really an interesting blend of the tropes and, of course, the reactions. But The Monkey, again, I've said many thoughts about it now back 3 or 4 months ago, but this is a film that just, it keeps getting better. I've seen it again, and it just, it hits even more when you watch it the second time. Just a grisly but funny film at the same time, kind of also tackling the idea about the randomness of death. So again, working on many different layers there, as well as just having the creepy trope and aesthetic of a toy monkey that may or may not be responsible for people's deaths. So The Monkey comes in at number 6. All right, number 5. This is a more recent film, and this was actually another film that I was somewhat surprised at where it fell on the ranking. But again, it is what it is. Number 5 for me, Jurassic World Rebirth. And this film, I'll be really curious where it shakes out this weekend with the box office results. Because critics have been just tearing this film a new one and basically trying to project it back to the Jurassic era. I myself loved it. And as somebody who has been extremely critical about the other sequels in the franchise, I know at the end of the day, yes, it's a movie about re-engineered dinosaurs. We shouldn't expect much. And so I kind of do take that to thought. But for me, no sequel, and again, this is not about trying to capture the magic of the original film. That was a perfect one and done. But the sequels to me have largely either somewhat stuck the landing, like The Lost World, or have just been a complete abomination, like the most recent one from a couple years ago, Jurassic World Dominion. This, to me, felt like a rebirth of the franchise. Gareth Edwards was a perfect choice to direct the film. It returns to the scary roots. Dinosaurs are scary once again. You've got a fantastic cast led by Scarlett Johansson. I hope if there are future installments, she, along with Jonathan Bailey and Mashallah Ali, and of course Gareth Edwards, all return, because they really feel that they have tapped into the sweet spot. And I love the fact that this film is a monster movie. It leans into the fact that dinosaurs are scary. These are re-engineered monsters. Why not play that up instead of doing some like save the world subplot or some like convoluted family drama, as a lot of the other films have tried to become or had cloning thrown into it? This one felt like it was returning back to the roots of the series at the beginning. Kind of felt Lost World adjacent, if you will. So big fan of this film. The T-Rex, of course, still has some bite. And, as far as I'm concerned, you will never look at a raft boat the same after this film. Hashtag, if you know, you know. So number 5 for me is Jurassic World Rebirth. And again, I hope people are discovering this film this weekend. It is opening, or it has opened at this point. And again, critics be damned as far as I'm concerned. Dinosaurs are back and they are scary again, and that's all that matters. All right, now into the top 4. And this one is actually from way back in January, but this film, I have seen it a couple times now, and again, each time I watch it, I fall in love with it more and more. And it is Companion. This is a perfect film. This is a perfect film because number one, you have sort of horror's new It Girl, if you will. And that's really kind of an understatement because she's been killing it in the genre for a while. But you have Sophie Thatcher who plays Iris, and spoiler alert if you haven't seen it, but she is a robot, to put it bluntly, an artificial companion. And I love how this film sort of subverts the expectations, where you expect her to be the maniacal killer setting out to wipe out humanity, or in this case, the people around her. But in other ways, the real monsters are the human beings and not the artificial one. I really found this film to be just absolutely incredible. A wonderful way of subverting the expectations and delivering something that felt fresh and timely. Of course, Jack Quaid is in it. He is always good in any role, but particularly when he's playing someone of a villain, and he's definitely doing that in spades in this particular film. But Companion, this film feels timely, and again, got us to actually be on the side of the robot. So there we go. I guess, you know, it's a brave new world after all. But number four for me is Companion. Number three, going from the beginning of the year back to just a week ago, F1 the movie. I have never had such an adrenaline rush like I had with this movie, but my God, it is like rocket fuel. Holy mother of God, does this movie rip and roar. From the cast, to the cinematography, to the adrenaline rush. As I said in my review last week, I left this film fist pumping in the sky. Spectacular in every sense of the word. It locks you in for a hell of a ride, and if it weren't for the next two films on my list, this movie would be number one at this point. I had such a ball with this film. I know nothing about Formula One racing. I felt like I learned something from this film and wanted to get out and start doing it professionally. That's not going to happen, and it shouldn't happen, but that's the kind of reaction that I had with this movie. See it on the biggest screen imaginable. I am trying to plot how I can get to this movie again because I want to go see Jurassic World, in part because I loved it, but also because they're showing the trailer for Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey. So kind of, you know, two for one there. But I am trying to figure out how I can get back to F1 again, because this movie is utterly spectacular. And it just locks you in as any great ride would. But there's also a fantastic story in it. It's one of Brad Pitt's best performances to date, as far as I'm concerned. I think might be his best performance since Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Absolute spectacle of a movie. There's already talk of a sequel. No surprise, this film is doing major numbers at the box office. And again, I think taps into that feeling of what people are looking for when they go to a movie, particularly on this scale. All right, so number three, of course, is F1. Oh, just, I love this movie. Absolutely love this movie. I've been telling everybody I know about it. Please go see it. Run to the theater if you have to. But I will stop myself and move on because we'll be here all night if I keep going. Number two. And talk about a film that I knew would be good, but I did not expect it to be as good as it was and is. And talk about a film that just blew me away. Number two, Ballerina. This, again, a spectacle of a movie with a kick-ass performance by Ana de Armas from the world of John Wick. This, I believe, is the action movie of the year. And I know some people might be saying, oh, what about Mission Impossible? No. Ballerina, this is the action movie of the year. The flamethrower scene in this movie might be the scene of the year. And that's saying something, considering what I'm going to be talking about in just a moment. But, oh, I am hoping that we get more of these films. I am hoping that more people discover this film now that it's available on streaming. I know, cut my tongue off. I'm talking about a streaming platform, but I hope more people find this film because it is utter gold. She is a certified badass in this movie, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And that's something that I have found to be a recurring theme with F1, Ballerina, and ultimately the next one I'm going to be talking about. I've been having a lot of fun at the movies and a lot of fun with the movies. And that to me is kind of, you almost would expect that, but you don't expect it to be at the level that it has been this year. So Ballerina, it checked all those boxes and then some. The definition of a movie that frankly had no business being as good as it is, but it just blows your mind. Like, you might have expectations. It incinerates them with a flamethrower. All right, moving on to the number one film of the year for me. You probably could guess it at this point since I haven't mentioned it. It is Ryan Coogler's Sinners. Talk about a film that, again, I knew would be good. I knew it would be good. It's a period piece. You've got Michael B. Jordan playing, again, a lot of twin roles in this year's films. I don't know what that says about 2025, but a lot of people playing double roles and just killing it, absolutely killing it. Throwing vampires at the same time. Again, I knew this film would be great. I did not expect this film to be, in a lot of ways, life-changing, because this movie, it locks you in and reaches into your soul and takes you on one hell of a ride. There is a scene in this film, which will be talked about for years, that just showcases Ryan Coogler's imagination, his ingenuity as a director, his vision, his use for cinematography. It's a wonderful spectacle of a movie, in addition to being entertaining, funny, horrifying. Again, vampires are these creepy, beast-like characters in this film. There's a lot of great subtext going into it as well. Such a powerhouse of a movie. I am going to say it right now. I think Sinners is going to get a Best Picture nomination. I think it's going to get a Best Director nomination. And I'll say yes. I think there will be a Best Supporting Actor or a Best Supporting Actress nomination for Hailee Steinfeld. And I'll say, yeah, I think Michael B. Jordan gets a nomination. Maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? That's how I feel about this movie. It is that good. It's one of those movies that comes along every so often and you just had to be there. You just had to be there. Like, you wouldn't think a movie set in the Deep South about vampires with sort of a blues infusion would be this monster hit. But then again, it's something that people weren't expecting. It's something that sort of just sort of crept up and then just appeared and everybody was talking about it. Check out the TikTok videos. The infusion of the Irish folk songs in this movie, the way that that is used with Jack O'Connell's vampire army. It's mind-bendingly awesome. And Ryan Coogler, you are a genius. You have brought vampires truly mainstream again and given us one of the best vampire films, not just this century, of all time. This movie will be talked about for years. It will be studied in film schools for years. There are countless YouTube videos analyzing this movie. People are obsessed, and it's, again, for the love of movies. Like, this is why I go to the theater. This is why I get so amped about this stuff. Because a movie like Sinners comes along, and I'll just say it, like a vampire, it latches on to you, and it doesn't let go. And again, who could think you could make a vampire movie that was both creepy and cool at the same time? Again, it has been done, but not for a long time. And just the infusion of the blues music and just the fantastic performance by Michael B. Jordan. Again, it's almost like two different people. That's what's incredible. The Smoke and Stack. I had to keep reminding myself, no, it's Michael B. Jordan. He's the one playing both characters, but he does such a great job at creating a distinction and making it seem like it's two separate actors, two separate performances. Oh, just a fantastic movie. I know we're going to be talking about this one at the end of the year. Right now, it is the number one film for me. It is the film to beat. I will be curious where the rest of 2025 stacks up for me, because this one, the bar is so high. I don't even know if any of the other films that are still to come will be able to cross it. They may come close, but I don't think anyone is going to cross it. So there we go. My top 10 films of the year so far. I will run them through in a descending order for you. Number 10 is Heart Eyes. Number 9, Thunderbolts. Number 8, Materialist. 7, Mickey 17. The Monkey at number 6. Jurassic World Rebirth at 5. The top 4, Companion. Number 3, F1. Ballerina at 2. And number 1, Sinners. There we go, everybody. My top 10 films of the year so far. Let me know what you think. Do you agree? Disagree? I want you to drop your top 10 films in the comments. Let me know so we can have a little back and forth. And we will circle back in 6 months. Like I said, guys, halfway through the year. What a year it has been, and still many more movies to go. And a perfect way to end this episode. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in for another show. I'll be back next week with my review of the new Superman film. Yes, I'll be seeing it on Tuesday night. See if this movie takes flight or stays grounded. Whatever the result, I will have all my thoughts for you next week, where we will do this all over again for the love of movies. Makes every move.